here's the Dead Sea, Jordan River, Jerusalem. Abram is at Hebron, or actually at Mamre, which is just slightly east of Hebron in the hill country. There's a place called Tal el Hamam, and we'll talk about that extensively in the next couple weeks, located right here. It's part of the city of the plains. There's also a place down here, and then there's also the location here that are potential locations of where Sodom's at. I think there's a real location of Sodom. I think Sodom's a real place. I think it's a real story. I used to think it was down here in this part of the Dead Sea, just because that was tradition. I consider the fact that it possibly was buried under the Dead Sea, because at different times the Dead Sea gets, you know, gets a little drier, and then there's cities underneath here that could have expanded down and covered it up. That I don't think that's very likely, because why would you build a city in a sea that's going to get covered up, especially a great city like Sodom? It seems to be a very important city. It's mentioned in the Ugaritic texts. I mean, we'll talk about this in the future. But it's not just a Bible city. The cities of the plains are listed in order in Ugaritic text. So how they're listed in the scriptures is how they're listed in cuneiform writings at this time. So it's not like a strange fictional land of Narnia. I do think this is a place up here. In the last 25 years, that's a general number, 25 years, this has been being excavated, and some great things have taken place, and we'll look into those things there. That's treating the Sodom derangement syndrome. That's this article, because some people don't want to see their Sunday school story move from south of the Dead Sea up here to this location, and they treat it kind of like people treat the King James Bible. It's the true Bible. It's the only Bible, and they become the King James only group, and everything else is false. And there's a point to that. You can research that. But they can't accept anything else or any other manuscripts being discovered. And same thing here. They could find this place and find a road sign that says "Welcome to Sodom," and they wouldn't change their opinion. So that's what this article about, is the derangement syndrome. And we'll talk more about that. Then here's an article from 2021. It says, "What if Sodom has been found?" And this is just a nice summary. I tried to find something that could kind of summarize some of the things about Sodom and its location. And this does a nice job of it. And it gets into, there's excavations going on. It's the right place, the right time. And it would have been a airburst, an explosion in the atmosphere that would have caused this event in Genesis. And that's kind of addressed in those two extra articles. We won't be reading those tonight, but you can have those and look at them, and I will be referring to them at different times. Now, in chapter 18, this is where it begins. Chapter 18, verse 1 through 15, we read this last time. Abram is in Hebron, or Mamre, and the Lord appears with him with two angels. Three men appeared, and they served them a meal. And the whole conversation in chapter 18, verses 1 through 15, was basically an announcement that Sarah is going to have a child by this time next year. And Sarah is hearing this conversation, and she chuckles at it, doesn't really believe it. And the Lord, with his back towards the tent without hearing her audibly, the Lord says, "Why did Sarah laugh?" And Sarah realizes this guy sitting out here talking knows much more than just the average person. This is a divine encounter. And the Lord's point there is nothing is too hard for the Lord. If he says it, it's going to take place. Now the story then continues in chapter 18, verse 16. And I'll read the story very quickly right here. It goes into chapter 19. I've always had a few questions about this story, like, one, how do they tie together? How does having a meal with Abraham announcing to Sarah that within a year she's going to have a son, and the two angels that are with them, and then they leave there, looks like they involve Abraham in the conversation of what the Lord is on his way to do, and then the two angels are going to go by themselves down to Sodom. And then we've got that whole story. Why are they the stories together? Why is Abraham involved? Why don't we just have a story about, you know, Sodom getting destroyed? Why do we have to have Abram involved in the conversation? And I think I can give you a few insights into why that's taking place. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Abraham has a covenant with God. God has made a covenant with Abraham to become a nation, and that through this nation, all nations will be blessed through God's interaction with Abram. In other words, it's not just, you know, God doing something for Abram. It's God is keeping knowledge, information, truth in the world through Abram. Abram's going to teach his family, and that family's going to continue throughout history, handing out this information, this knowledge of God, preserving the revelation of God in the earth. And through that truth, all nations will be blessed. And we're talking about Jesus Christ coming and becoming the king of all the nations ultimately. But Israel's whole purpose, you can see them taking place, we'll refer to it as we go through this tonight, that wherever Israel goes, they bring knowledge of God, God's perspective of history. And without that, we'd be left with pagan mythology, or in our modern case, we'd be left with secular humanism and evolution and meaninglessness and materialism. And now you get guys like Bill Gates that says, you know, the best thing we can do is just reduce the population. We're just going to have to kill off 25% of the people. And if we have to use vaccines, Dr. Fauci, let's go ahead and start eliminating people. It's for the benefit of mankind. It's like, well, that's not moral. There's no morals. There's only evolution from this blindless universe that exploded out of nothing. And it's like, well, that's pagan mythology, you know, dressed up like modern philosophy. And God is going to be putting into the world through Abraham and the nation of Israel this knowledge of this benevolent being that cares about mankind and judges mankind based on right and wrong, which is his nature. And that's kind of where this whole conversation is going. So I'll start in the NIV here and read chapter 18, verse 16, down to the end of the chapter. And then we'll come back and look at it. Verse 15, they just got done talking to Sarah. Sarah was afraid, so she lied and says, I did not laugh. But he, Yahweh, said, yes, you did laugh. When the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom. And again, I don't want to stop, but I just did. They're coming out of Mamre, so somehow they're looking, and I'll show you some maps here in a moment. They're looking down here. They're looking down here. They're looking down here. All of them work. They got up to leave. They looked down towards Sodom. And Abram walked along with them to see them on their way. He's the host. He's the perfect host. He's ending the meeting with them, walking them to a certain distance to say goodbye. Then the Lord said, and this is a huge verse, and I've never really understood. I spent some time studying, reading commentaries on this. It's never really made sense. But then the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Abraham, he says, Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. Now he's just reciting the covenants he's made with Abraham. For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him. So now he's talking about not just Abraham himself being a blessing, but the children, the families coming after him will continue in this covenant and continue to be a blessing. His children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. And that's the theme of this chapter, right and just. So that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. He's promised Abraham some things as a nation, but ultimately he's promised to bless the whole world, all the nations, through Abram. So I'm going to get Abraham involved in this because this is the reason I chose Abraham, is for situations just like this. Then the Lord said to Abram, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sin so grievous, that I will go down and see if what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. The men turned away and went towards Sodom. So that's the two other angels that is with the Lord. They're going to show up in chapter 19, verse 1. And they're right there in my NIV, it says, chapter 19, verse 1, the two angels arrived at Sodom. So in chapter 18, verse 22, the men turned away and went towards Sodom. Chapter 19, verse 1, the two angels arrived at Sodom. So there it is. But Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Somewhere in this area right here, looking east this direction, he's standing before the Lord. Then Abram approached him and says, now again, this is one of the things that's of the other things that confuse me. You know, I wonder, why is God stopping here having lunch? Why is he, you know, talking to Abraham about this situation? And why does Abraham out of nowhere just say this? Then Abram approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Which is like, well, what's he talking about? Well, it appears there's been some conversation going on, or at least it's so obvious Abram knows what's taking place. So Abraham has had some either information from the Lord, or just kind of reading the room knows, uh-oh, I think he's here to judge Sodom. So then Abram approached him and says, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Again, there's that word righteous. What if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people in it? So now he's contrasting justice and righteousness, or justice and mercy. Meaning God's got to be not just just in the sense of just, you know, blast everything and destroy everything. He's also got to be the caretaker. He's the one that's put this whole ball into action. There's going to have to be some what we call grace. Otherwise, he could just destroy everything. And again, this is part of that contrasting this God that Abraham has been introduced to the other gods that they're familiar with in the pagan nations. I'm not sure, I can't say they've got secular humanism and evolution, but they've got things very similar to that that are just pointless, meaningless. The gods are just random in how they behave. God is being identified very clearly, first of all, as a righteous God, meaning there's right and there's wrong, and he cannot behave in a wrong way. There's light and there's darkness, and he cannot behave in a dark way. He's got to behave in the light. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be judgment, but it can't just be, you know, random. It's got to have a purpose. In fact, what's going to be described here as we end up getting through this God of Abraham is a God that you can, in a sense, if we can say that very carefully here, you can know or you can predict how God will respond to a situation because this is what he thinks. This is his character. What does God think of this situation? We don't know everything, but I know from God's nature, he's not pleased with this behavior. And so you can predict how God's going to interact into a situation. You can, in a sense, predict, not in a sense predict the future like prophesying, unless God reveals it to you, but you can predict there's going to be judgment and evil will be punished and righteousness will be rewarded. You can't do that we don't think about it, but you can't do that in pagan religions. You don't really know. It's like, what makes this God happy today? We're not sure. It's arbitrary. Okay, so he says, what if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing. In other words, he's accusing God. If there's 50 righteous people in that city and you wipe that city out, that's not justice. That's not right. And we got to figure out why 50. To kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike, far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? Now, there's a new title. Now, it's not new for us. It's not like we didn't know this. He created the earth in the beginning. He judged the Tower of Babel. He judged the flood of Noah. But here he's being held accountable. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? If you're the judge of all the earth, you can't just, when you want to do what's right, you've got to judge all the earth in that same righteousness. You've got to hold the standard. You can't just arbitrarily say, well, I've just had enough. I'm just having a bad day, and on a whim go off and do something. It's got to follow the pattern. Will not the judge of all the earth do right? The Lord says, now watch this, if I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Now in my mind, as you know, being the one that wrote Hope for America's Last Generation and living through the last, you know, 20 years of American history, it's like, when are we going to see some ramifications for the evil that's rampant in our culture? Well, we could spare it for a few righteous people. I think a few righteous people would rather go down with the ship and just watch this thing get eliminated. But Abraham said, well, you know, God says, if I find 50 people, I'll spare Sodom. Now, Sodom is going to be one of the worst cities in the city. And God just says, if there's 50 people there, I can work with that. It's like, I'm thinking, no, you can't. You need to sweep that thing away. And if 50 innocent people die, I mean, that's part of life. That's just the way things are. That's got not God's attitude. Now, again, why 50? I'm going to tell you this ahead of time because I keep wanting to say it. Why 50, and we're going to work that number down, is, again, you've got, there's several things taking place here. One, we know that how God will react because he's a righteous God. But as soon as you establish God will, you know, and it might have bothered you even when I said that, we know what God is going to do because we know his nature. We know how God will interact in situations. Okay, we have a general idea, but it's not a formula. Because as soon as God intervenes, it's like he's going to do what's right, but it's never going to really necessarily be done exactly the way we wanted it done. So why 50? Is he going to let this city of Sodom just live in immorality? And basically, it's social injustice. The theme is social injustice. They're oppressive to people. And they don't know what's right or wrong. One of the things that's going to come up here in this story is if I was God, I would send, you know, Abram, why don't you get a missionary group together and go in there and let's, you know, start going door to door and start maybe teaching these people and bring a revival about. And it's kind of like, no, these people are gone. The light has become dark. Dark has become light. Evil's right. They don't feel guilt. Their hearts are calloused. That's why they are in what we'd say the fourth generation. It's over. We can't do anything with them. And so it's not an ideal of sending a missionary in there. But why 50? We're going to let this wickedness go on for 50 people. The ideal, it appears, is if in that city there are still 50 people, that's hope. That's hope for America's last generation. I mean, there's 50 people here that are still righteous. They've still got a conscience. They still can identify right and wrong, light and darkness. If they are allowed to live, grow, the future will be different because of these 50 people. And if these 50 people are concentrated in Sodom, Sodom will be a different place in 10 years than it is today because of 50 people. I think that's the concept. And then Dennis Prager, I was reading Dennis Prager, and he was talking there, and I'm way ahead of myself here off my notes and everything. But can 50 people have an impact in history? And he used the example of evil. And you can name some individual evil people, like if it be, you know, Hitler would be a great example. Is like, does World War II, if there is no Hitler, again, this is just Dennis Prager talking, and he had several examples. Does World War II happen if there is no Hitler? It's like you almost needed Hitler to bring everything's kind of swirling around, but Hitler was the one that brought it all together and made it happen. And you can see other places in history, if you removed one individual, things may have gone a totally different direction, or at least slightly different direction. And that's what, and now, can one person make that kind of impact? One person, like you got a Billy Graham. Can a Billy Graham, well, sure, they can make an impact. The idea here is if there's 50 righteous people in that city of Sodom, if Hitler can do what he did, just think what 50 righteous people can do in that city. So God says, if there's 50, the future, there is a future. There's a future for Sodom if there's 50 righteous people. Okay, now now Abram's going to start playing again an interesting game. He's not going to go as a missionary, but he's now going to start negotiating with God. How low can I get this number? And then we know he's going to stop at 10. Why does he start at 50? And he keeps working down. And I'm reading the story ever since I was a child. You read the story, 10. Well, what comes next? 5, and then 4, until he finally gets to one righteous person. But it doesn't. He just does that. I don't know. Has that ever bothered you? He gets to 10, goes, okay, that's good. All right, we're good. Why did he stop at 10? Some have said, well, that's because he figured out there's Lot, and then he's got his couple of daughters. He's got his wife. The daughters have apparently, you know, the son-in-laws, you know, they're going to marry, and then he might have a couple other kids that are married. So there may be 10 in Abram's family that are living there with Lot, that could be it. That could be why 10 stops there. Maybe we don't know why he stops there, but I think what he's working down to is this quorum of 10 people. If there are 10 righteous people, even in Sodom, the future looks bright for Sodom if there's 10 righteous people. Because these 10 righteous people are not going to become 8 righteous people and lose someone. These 10 righteous people are going to become 20 righteous people, which is going to become 40 righteous people, which is going to start saving neighborhoods. And you're going to have, in a sense, a revival of bringing people back. And so again, that's kind of what I think he's looking for, is that a quorum of people that will be able to be there to live righteous, to teach, to intercede with the people and bring them out. Well, here it continues. Verse 26, the Lord said, if I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Then Abram spoke again. Now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, because again, he kind of rebuked the Lord. He says, far be it from you to destroy a place like that, because you're going to be violating your own character. You're going to be sweeping away potentially righteous people. So he says, you know, far be it, I've already spoken boldly. Though I am nothing but dust and ashes. In other words, I know my place, but I'm going to intercede one more time. What if the number of the righteous is 5 less than 50? Now, again, I think it's important. He doesn't say, what if there are, and some translations will say this, 45. For 50, what if there's 45 there? And that's fair, but it's not the way it's spoken. It's not the way it's written. He says, instead of saying 45, if you're going to spare the city for 50 people, what if you've got 50 people, but just a measly 5 people less? I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, it's not for 5 people. You're going to go from sparing the city to destroying the city. And again, how does Abram know God's talking about destroying the city? I mean, he hasn't come right out and said. It's something that he's picked up, or maybe he said it without it being recorded here. But Abram knows they're sparing the city. And so he says, if it's 5 less than 50, and he's not like doing a math problem, he says, if there's 5 less, for 5 people are missing, you're going to wipe out the entire city? In other words, 45. And God continues to talk to him. If I find 45 there, so God does the math. If I find 45 there, he says, I will not destroy it. Once again, he spoke to him, Abram did. What if only 40 are found there? He said, for the sake of 40, I will not do it. And now the narration picks up right here. And you say, finally. Then he says, may the Lord not be angry, but let me speak. What if only 30 can be found there? He answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there. Abram says, now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, what if only 20 can be found there? So 45, then 40 to 30. Now he's down to 20. There's 20 righteous people there. He said, for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. Then he says, may my Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there? Now he's down to that number 10. And that's he's shooting for that, or he's stopping there. Again, how come? I think it's because if there's 10 righteous people, there's hope. If there's only 9 or 8, it's kind of like, okay, there's not enough to make a difference. Now, we said one person can make a difference, evil. Could one righteous person make a difference? If that's what he's talking about, in Abraham's mind, it's going to be hard for one righteous person to make a difference. Or he's trying to think of his family. May the Lord not be angry. Let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there? He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. If you can find 10 righteous people there, I'll let the city continue with the understanding I'll come back in a few weeks and judge it, or with the understanding that 10 people will make a difference and I'll come back in 10 years and we'll have a completely different city. When the Lord had finished speaking with Abram, he left. And Abram returned home. So he's gone outside of Mamre somewhere, and now he's turned and gone back into Mamre. And the Lord apparently doesn't ascend into heaven or vaporize. It appears just to walk off. The angels have gone. If your Sodom is here under the Dead Sea, or if your Sodom's over here, or if your Sodom's up here, the angels have gone walking in. And the Lord maybe followed. I'm not sure. He doesn't appear again in the story except the result of his actions. Chapter 19, verse 1, just so you see what's happening here. The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. So wherever Sodom's at, Lot is in the gateway. And the gateway is not just, you know, doesn't mean he's sitting on his front porch. A gateway would mean that's the main place. That's where the elders sit. He's sitting in a leadership position in the evening in before the gates are shut for protection for that evening. So that's the story we're looking at tonight. And now I'm going to look at the notes. On that first page, these are things we looked at last time. The first gray map right there that you see, I made that, and I've changed it from the 80s when I first made it. I had originally had Sodom down south on that, and actually a guy came to, I forgot, his name I think was Phil or Dave. I used to remember it, but I forgot his name. But he came when we were meeting out at the West Des Moines Community Center. He came, and he'd came for 2 or 3 weeks. He was in town doing some study, some kind of schooling, and he's a pastor now, but he'd been over working with Dr. Collins at Tel Al-Haman. And you just don't always hear of everything. I'd seen some articles, but never paid attention to it. And he said, he brought me a book or something. And he says, I've got it down located down south on my maps. He goes, yeah, I see that. So, I mean, he'd seen, gone through my maps and found out where, and they're against that because they're excavating Sodom up in the north. And he came for weeks. He went back and excavated another season, came back, brought me back something, a handle. I'll show it to you eventually, and I think I have. Gave me a set of books. Came to church one Sunday. Brought a sling stone one time from Sodom, a sling stone that was found. But it was at that time, probably 2012 or something like that, that I thought, you know, I'm convinced Sodom is probably... So I went in and changed these maps and drew, you know, as you see right there. And again, that's my own drawing. But that's where you can see Hebron, the great trees of Mamre, where Abraham was. And then if Sodom's up there, the angels would have gone something like that. Also, coming up in the story eventually, where Sodom is at, Lot, as you know, and Abram are going to part company standing, that second map there, standing between Bethel and Ai. And so you can see where Bethel and Ai are at. Abram's built an altar there previously, and they look down and they can see the cities on the plain. They can see Sodom. And so if it's Tel El Hamam right there, you can see where it's Shittim or Sodom there in the north, or it could be further down, and they could, you know, you got to decide if they can see it from that far. And then there's that map, the Google Earth map I showed you that last time, how far it is. Now turn the page. And what I did tonight, I did this again because one of the books I was reading, it says 3 miles east of Hebron is a place called, and I've got it written there, Beninam. Beninam right there. It's a city there today, right there. That'd be close to where Mamre's at. Mamre is somewhere from Hebron over this way. But right here, this is a hill country. It's on the edge of the hills. From there, the book said, this is not one of the guys I'm talking about here, Dr. Collins or Dr. Graves. There's another guy, Phil Silvis. I can't remember his last name. And I've got an autograph book from him. I'm not sure where I got that from, but he wrote a note in it. I'm not sure if he sent it to me or how I got that. But that, one of my commentaries was saying, from here you can look and see the bottom of the Dead Sea. You can see across the hills, the mountains of Moab, and you could see up here. You could definitely stand here and see. And this is where Abram, if he walked with the Lord a little ways, it would be, that's only 3 miles, they'd be standing right there looking, and they could see that place. So you can see that on there. And I've got circled on the bottom of page 2, Beninam, and that's 3 miles east of Hebron. And up there in the top right there, I've got Tel El Hamam circled. In fact, on Google Maps, Google Earth, and I underline it with a little white line right there, it actually says on the maps itself, it says Sodom. It says Sodom on Google Maps right there. I've got it in that top right corner right here in the little white line. If you look real close, you can't see it because it's black and white. But it says Sodom, and that's written right there on Google Earth, which is interesting because that seems like a commitment. I didn't check to see what the Gulf of America is called yet. But if you turn the page, there's the same thing there. I just got a little bit closer. You can see the hill country. See where on page 3, Beninam, which is, again, 3 miles east of Hebron. You can see how very quickly it drops down. You see the topography on that second map. And you can stand in the high place right there and look down over that coast dropping down into the Dead Sea. So they, from there, you could see north, south, straight across. You could see wherever Sodom's at, you could see it. So, I mean, the story's right on track so far. So anyway, I just put those in there because, again, if you would look up, I just typed in Hebron, comma, Beninam, and click go, and then you know several things pop up, but a map popped up. I clicked on the map, and there you can see it. Anyway, I just wanted you to see that. So anyway, chapter 18, verse 16. Here's now the notes. I wanted to get through this. It says, then the men set out. This is the English Standard Version. Then the men set out from there, and they looked down towards Sodom. You see, that's why I make those maps. See, they looked down towards Sodom. It's not just a Bible story. They're there looking down toward Sodom, wherever it's at. And Abram went with them to set them on their way. And the first thing I write, point one, Abram completes his role as the perfect host. I mean, they walked in, he ran around, got Sarah making bread, he went out and got the animals, had a meal. He stood up while they ate, serving them. they had the meal. They have a conversation about the covenant, about Isaac. He was the perfect host, and now it's time to leave. He walks them to a certain point to say goodbye to them, a perfect host, which again is going to be contrary to the way the people of Sodom behave. And again, this story is about, and I'm going to, if I got to hurry, this story is about social justice, if you want to say that. It's how to behave. It's how, what is the proper way to function. If God is moral, then he's going to treat us in a moral way, but he's also going to expect us to be moral and to treat others in a moral way. This is part of the idea of this God that Abraham is following. He is a just, moral God, expects to treat us just and morally, but then because we learn and follow him, we ourselves will treat others justly and morally, which now is going to revive the whole world. I mean, that's that simple. Through Abram, all nations will be blessed. Why? Because through Abram, a just, moral God will be introduced to them, and they'll know that they're being treated just and morally by God, and they're being expected to treat others justly and morally, and you'll have solid nations, solid families, solid marriages, solid individuals that are imitating the God, and they will be blessed because they're in line with reality. I mean, that's basically sums it up. And I think that comes back to, if there's 10 righteous people that can live this way in Sodom, there's a chance of saving and blessing Sodom with those 10 righteous people. And then that's enough on page 2. Page 3. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abram what I'm about to do?" Now, this is really the crux. You've got to figure this out. I've got to figure this out because this sets the stage for whatever's taking place in this chapter. And I've been frustrated over the years teaching this. I kind of, you know, you've heard people teach and you've talked about it and you've, you know, got opinions about it. And you can just fly through this and say, well, that's the story, turn to the next chapter. But I get in here and it's kind of like, what's happening here? There's things are missing. And here's my attempt at it tonight. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?" In other words, this moral God is about to do something drastic that's going to have ramifications. I mean, the closest thing we've got to this so far is the flood of Noah. In fact, it's a parallel. The Tower of Babel, where you see very similar things happening. The Lord saying, let's go down and see if this is really going on. And he sees the flood, brings judgment, sees the tower, brings judgment. And now he's got Abram with a covenant. It's like, I'm about to go see and bring judgment. I've got Abraham as a partner. And that's what it is. These are going to be covenant terms. He's now got to put Abraham in. I can't just go down there and flood the earth. Now again, I overspeak, I overstate my words. He can do whatever he wants to. But in Noah's day, Noah built a flood, I'm going to wipe it out. In the Tower of Babel, he didn't go talk to someone. He just went out, let us go look, and let's confuse this place. And then he chooses Abraham, and he doesn't do this to Galen. See, he didn't call Galen. He says, Galen, all nations will be blessed with you. No, he didn't do that with the Apostle Paul. He didn't do that with anyone. He told Moses, I don't want to get off track, but he got so mad about Israel, God says, listen, I'm just going to kill all these people, and you and I will start over. You, Moses, we're going to forget this nation, forget Abraham's nation, and we'll start again. And Moses says, you can't do that. You've got a covenant with Abraham. You've got to stick with your first plan. And so there's a place you can see that where God is like, I'll just wipe these guys out and we'll start with you. We'll start a brand new nation with you. And Moses says, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do what you said. We're going to use the Abrahamic covenant. But nonetheless, Abraham's involved in this. And so when he says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Up until a few years ago, Abraham didn't matter. But Abraham now is going to be a nation, and through Abram, he is going to bless all nations, God will bless all nations through Abram, and God is about ready to wipe out this group of people, which is basically a nation, the cities on the plain. And am I going to hide this from Abram, or am I going to tell him, Abram, here's what's going on. This nation has to go. In other words, this nation right here, this group, this city of the plains, they've got to go. The outcry has reached heaven. And if it's reached heaven, it's reached across the Jordan into Jericho, and it's reached over into the mountains of Moab. Abram probably knows, heard about these people. I can't believe Lot's there, or at least he's, you know, got an email from Lot on how bad it is or something. And then you wonder what Lot's doing. Lot is down in a leadership position in this city, in the gate. What's he doing? Again, I don't have an answer to that yet. But he says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Because I think Abraham is important. And that's right here. Number one, this falls in line, first of all, with Amos chapter 3, verse 7. And this is one of the things you're going to see. Abraham is a prophet. He's not only the keeper of the Abrahamic covenant, he's going to be functioning as a prophet. The Lord is appearing before him. He's talking to him. He's telling him what he's going to do. And now as a prophet, shall I hide from Abraham? That sounds very similar to Amos chapter 3, verse 7. I've got it written right there. For the Lord God does nothing without revealing his secret to his servants, the prophets. So you've got Abraham as just simply being Abraham, the man who's going to have the nation that's going to bless all the nations. But he's also going to be standing as a prophet. This is this. I mean, when you look at this, well, if God's about to wipe out a city, he's going to have to tell Abram, the man who's going to bless all the nations, and he's going to have to tell the prophet about what he's going to do. So this is part of his plan. And so I think that that makes sense. And point two, it says, is God revealing to Abraham Sodom's fate, or is he revealing to him Abraham's fate? And this comes down to this again. Abram's role is to bless the nations. And we're going to consider Sodom and the cities on the plain as at least a community, at least a small nation, a city-state, if nothing else. And Abram's job is to bless the nations. Now, where this is going, Abraham is not going to live forever. He's going to have a family, Isaac, and then Jacob, and then Joseph, and then Ephraim, and then Daniel, and then Nehemiah, eventually Jesus. All these people, the covenant is going to continue, and each of these people in their time is going to have to do what? How is God going to bless the nations through Abram? It's going to be through these people. Isaac, we'll see him bless nations. We'll see Jacob bless nations. We'll see Joseph bless nations. Daniel, Nehemiah, Jesus, Peter, Paul, and they're going to be blessing the nations, and ultimately the Messiah is going to come. And so Abraham is going to be in charge of Sodom, being able to help them in his time, but because he follows the Lord, it's kind of assumed, as Jesus or the Lord speaks here, that if Abraham is following the ways of the Lord, what will his son Isaac do? He's going to follow in the ways, because Abram's going to teach Isaac, and then Isaac will teach Jacob, and Jacob will teach his tribe. Each one will be teaching, and they will hear the covenant, they'll learn the ways of the Lord, and they'll bless the nations with what? Giving them, you know, financial aid, or giving them the revelation of God. And so I think right there, this is not just talking about telling Abram what's going to happen to Sodom. He's got to tell Abram what's taking place right here, because this is the entire plan for Abram, is to avoid, prevent nations from, like Sodom, from existing. So, seeing that Abraham, he says, chapter 18, verse 17, the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Seeing that Abraham shall, watch, see? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, seeing Abraham's about to go here and do these things, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed by him. That verse says exactly this. Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Because this nation, that's Abraham's responsibility. Because Abraham is going to teach his family, and they're going to become a great nation that's going to bless all the nations. So it will begin. It begins now. I think that's the stage of where we're at. Point one on page four indicates God's promise or covenant with Abraham is sure and includes all nations. God is concerned with all nations, and Abraham is concerned that God is going to judge all nations justly. Chapter 18, verse 19. Here's all the covenant terms. You can see them. I've got them in boxes, and I've got them written. Point one, got them written down there. The word yada, which means to know or chosen. Sawa, which means command. Samar, which means keep. Sadiq, which means righteous. Mispat, which means justice. And Dabur means to speak, or referring to the covenant. Now here, chapter 18, verse 19. You can just read this, but this is God reaffirming that I have a covenant with Abraham, that I've made promises to him. I can't just leave him out of the equation any longer. Abraham is a player in my game of history of the world. And here it says it. For I have chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him. In other words, I've chosen him, and his job now is to teach his children after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice. Once again, that's the theme of this chapter. God is righteous. God is just. He's looking at Sodom, who is socially unjust. So now justice has to destroy them. But Abraham is going to take his family and teach them righteousness and justice. Why do they need to know righteousness and justice? Why do they need to know right and wrong? Why do they need to know morality? Because they're going to be teaching the nations this morality. All the nations are in idol worship. Their gods are flippant. They have no rhyme or reason. They don't even know where they came from. They just made them up. And they just, weird things happen to the assigns. And they're offering offerings. They're offering children as sacrifices. They're giving. What do the gods want? We don't know. It's like, no, it's not a chaotic world. Teach the nations. Bless the nations. God is moral. God is just. You be moral. You be just. And teach the nations, and we'll all be blessed. God's righteous. We'll be righteous. We'll teach righteousness. We'll live in righteousness. And then we come into our culture with secular humanism. It's meaningless. We came out of nowhere. You understand, that is just an unravel. That is the most damnable thing that we could have in our culture coming out of the 1880s is coming in, is that concept of evolution, meaninglessness. And it's like you're eliminating a God who's righteous and moral. Well, if he's not there, how can you judge me? We all have our own truth. Well, we all have our own truth. We're heading to where? Well, social injustice. It's like we can oppress these people. Why? There's not right or wrong. Who can tell me what's right or wrong? And we all here over in Sodom, what we remember, what I remember, is the sexual immorality. But the prophets do not, that's one of the last things the prophets, when they refer to Sodom and Gomorrah, is the sexual immorality. You know what they talk about first? The social injustice. The people that were prosperous, living at ease, that had no regard for the poor. Oh, yeah, they became totally sexual perverts, but it's because they were at ease. They disassociated themselves with reality, and they began to oppress other people, do whatever they wanted to. It's kind of like, well, what's stopping me from just being a sexual pervert? Nothing. And so that's the final phase. When we look at our culture, it's like, how easy is it to write a book like Hope for America's Last Generation? It's like, look at the sexual perversion I wrote in 2007, and look how far we've come. It's like we're on the throes of teetering into oblivion, and we've got this break right now in our culture where it's like, oh, you know, we're going to have some justice done. Yeah, but we are in the days of Josiah, because they'd lost the book of Deuteronomy. You know the story. Isaiah had come, had condemned the nation. Josiah and Jeremiah bring revival. They find the book of Deuteronomy. Josiah gets killed, and he's got three sons and a grandson that follow him as king. You got Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, Zedekiah, and Jehoahaz was the first one. And they just became progressively more and more wicked. So between 605 and 586, everything that Josiah had used executive orders and ordered the temple to be rebuilt, and we're going to reinstate the priesthood, all his executive orders, he got killed in battle, and by between 605 and 586, they're gone. They're in Babylon captivity. So again, I have hope for America's last generation, and we like what we're seeing, but understand, these are like the days of Josiah. It's like, we haven't crossed any hurdles. You need revival in the hearts of the people. You need to take this callous nation that is socially oppressive and somehow, and they call social oppression, what isn't social oppression? I mean, they're calling things, you know, women are oppressed and blacks are oppressed. And it's like, we are the land of the free. What is oppressed is truth. Truth is what is being oppressed. And the fact that everyone has to be accountable, we're completely unraveling. Okay, we got to get back to this. Nonetheless, you see all the covenant terms. Got them listed there. Point two in the bottom, page four. Why will Abraham be this influential with nations? He's got a covenant that God gave him. He will train his family for the generations to come. I've got it all listed there. Abraham's involvement with Yahweh naturally means Yahweh will instruct his household in the way of the Lord. And that's the phrase, the way of the Lord, Derek Yahweh, the way of Yahweh. By doing what is right and just refers to the ethical behavior toward others, including social justice. Because he'll direct his children in the way of the Lord to be righteous and just. Because Abraham has met the righteous God that is just, he himself will instruct his household to be righteous and just and walk in the ways of Yahweh, which means they will then in turn spread righteousness and justice throughout their families, throughout their cultures, and the nations they come in contact with. Okay, look at this. Point A. Doing what is right and just is the word Sadiq and you mispat, which is Sadiq and mispat, which is righteous and justice. Justice, mispat, is achieved by upright conduct. That's Isaiah 5:7. Here's an example. I got two examples. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. This is Isaiah writing. This is before the days of Josiah. And the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. So in other words, the house of Israel is this vineyard that God planted to have righteousness and justice. That's why Abraham, he's counting on this. They're going to bless all the nations. And the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. The men of Judah are going to be the people that spread knowledge of God throughout the nations. And he looked for justice. Yahweh looked at his nation, looked at the men of Judah for justice. But behold, bloodshed. He looked for righteousness. These are the two words, justice and righteousness. That's from this chapter. And now in Isaiah, he's looking at Israel for this justice and righteousness. But instead, behold, bloodshed. And instead of righteousness, behold, an outcry. Now, outcry is exactly what's going to be taking place in Sodom and Gomorrah, a great outcry. It's people crying out for help. It means shriek. They're the victims. And so he plants Israel, and it's like they're going to be the ones that take and bless all the nations. In Isaiah's day, around 700 BC, he comes and looks. Instead of righteousness, instead of justice, I see bloodshed and oppression, outcrying. And so there's to be a contrast. Point five, Abraham will teach his family and his family will teach the world. This is to be the contrast. I've said that several times. Chapter 18, verse 20. Then the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave. I've got in that box the word outcry. And in chapter, turn the page and look at chapter 18, verse 21. Oh, two pages. Boy, that's a lot of information. Chapter 18, verse 21, it's a similar word to outcry. It's also in a box. It means, both words are basically synonyms. They mean cry, outcry, a cry for help. It's a shriek. And this is a reference to people's response to social injustice. That's not the way humanity is supposed to function, but no one knows any better. They've been taught by the secular humanist school system. They've been indoctrinated by Bill Gates and Fauci. We're going to just limit population. We're going to kill what we need to kill. It's like there's no right or wrong. It's like, oh no, we've got a lot of social injustice taking place. The Lord is acting justly by not simply and quickly sending judgment. Okay, you can see Genesis 11:5 and 11:7 there. That's reference to going down and seeing. One of the things that we see in this, and I'm out of time. One of the things we see in this that's contrasting this Yahweh, Abraham's God, with the pagan gods, is God has heard the outcry, says it twice, from Sodom. I've heard there's some oppression going on. But instead of acting, he's going to go investigate. He's going to go down and see. He's going to go down and find out himself. In other words, this is not a God that's just sitting in heaven. I've heard some people murmuring down there. Smite them. It's like, okay, I've heard some murmuring down here. Because I'm just, I will go investigate myself. I know what you're saying, but I will go determine if this is truly unjust. And he's going to send you, that's what the angels are going down to check to see. We've heard this great outcry. There's a lot of oppression, a lot of shrieking, a lot of unjust things going on. Social oppression. Well, we should just smite them. We could, except I'm a moral, just God. I will go down and look and see and evaluate it myself on my standard of righteousness. Now, the pagan gods wouldn't do that. And then when he sees it, he can see what his decision is going to be. There's your word outcry, point six. Point seven, the prophets warn of Sodom's social... I'll read this and then we got to quit. Top of page six, point six. Ezekiel 16, 48 through 50. This is one of the greatest verses to sum up what's taking place in Sodom. Ezekiel's writing, "As I live, declares the Lord God, your sister Sodom and her daughters," that's the cities around Sodom, "have not done as you and your daughters have done." And that would be Israel's cities and, you know, Samaria cities. "Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. Lest you forget, this was what they did wrong. They were sexual perverts." No. If you notice, that's the last thing listed. Before they were sexual perverts, how did they become sexual perverts? "Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride." They had their own way. They weren't going to listen. They were prideful. They're going to leave and separate themselves. You can follow the four-generation cycle through this. Eyes that are lifted up. This is the pride generation. I mean, it's like a mathematical equation. It's not their pride. "And excess of food." They had plenty. They prospered. They were prideful, so they took care of themselves first. "We have plenty of food." And now they've got plenty of food. They have prosperous ease. They've got free time. They've got weekends. They've got vacation time. They've got retirement accounts. It's like they prosper. Pride, excessive food, prosperous ease. Okay, that's not bad. Solomon had that. God will bless us. But because you are a righteous, just people, when you have excess food and you have prosperous ease, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to continue to do what God called me to do, spread righteousness, spread justice. I'm going to be moral and continue to advance the kingdom of God. But they did not aid the poor and needy. They had the time, they had the resources. But instead of helping and spreading social justice, instead of going off and helping the poor and helping the needy that are confused about life, they did not aid them. Instead, they were haughty, goes back to the original pride, and instead of helping the poor and needy, they did an abomination before me. They became sexual perverts because they had nothing else left. It's like, what else is left? Let's become sexual perverts. And that's where they ended up, and that's where we pick them up in the Sodom of story. Is the, as you know, the angels show up, and without a glimmer of guilt, without a sense of morality, the men of Sodom come to Lot's house and say, "Send those guys out. We want to have sex with them." It's like, and Lot tries to say, "You can't do this. This is a terrible thing." It's like, We've turned darkness to light. We don't understand what you're talking about. Just why are you being so? Why they say, why are you trampling on our rights? They say, you came here, now you want to tell us what's right and wrong. Listen, we don't tell you how to live. Don't tell us how to live. Who knows what's right or wrong? Send them out. So then, I still don't understand. We'll get there. But I still don't understand this part of the story. So Lot says, here's my two daughters. Rape them instead. Oh, great idea. See, Lot's a problem solver. It's like, what is going on in the city? Well, we're at the end of the fourth generation. It's like, that's how bad it can get. It's like, it doesn't even, fortunately, it doesn't make sense to me. I've never seen anything like that, thank God. But if things continue in history, it will make sense to you. You will have seen it. It's like, yes, this is what we're afraid of. This is what is happening. It's not just a story. It's like the end of the fourth generation. Anyway, good news. We'll pick that up next week. I'll pray, and we got to go. I hope you enjoy your snowstorm. I'm looking forward to it. Father, do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We ask that we would be a righteous people, a just people, that we would enjoy our prosperity, that we'd enjoy the success that you've given to us, but we would not take our eyes off of the purpose that you've called us to spread justice, to spread righteousness, to be a blessing to the nations, just as you called Israel to do, that we would continue to spread good things to the nations, including the gospel of Jesus Christ. We do thank you for this opportunity and ask that you'd lead and guide us in these things. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Hey, thank you again, and I apologize for not getting through this. Any questions? Any corrections?
When I hear social justice, it's just a term that I come to despise.
Right, right. Right, because evil has taken it and turned it, it's an evil term.
Right.
It's oppression.
Right.
Today, your social justice is social oppression.
Right.
And no, I agree. I agree with you. I'm like Trump. I'm trying to take the name back, you know, Gulf of America, social justice, that kind of thing.